Accession number 18614, Reel 3.
Jack Holness, Reel 3.
Having arrived at the battalion and not being accepted into the signal platoon, it was found that there was a shortage of anti-tank gunners, of which I soon became established as a gun layer in the anti-tank platoon, put into a section and trained as a gun layer. This being the most responsible job in the gun team, although I was classed as the young soldier. During this period, we did training in the Tobruk area, and we were dug in on a perimeter with sporadic patrols and fighting. Things were rather quiet at that time. We stayed in that area and did what we called flying patrols for probably about 2 months. Then,
what type of things would happen on those patrols?
Well, mainly the carrier platoon would go into things the furthest and hit out at his patrols, which were in the area. And we just seemed to be keeping contact with the enemy at that time. Everyone seemed to be regrouping for things to come, bigger things to come, which in effect did happen later, which I'll come on to.
But were casualties being taken in this skirmishing?
The odd casualty, just the odd one at that time, were being taken. It was a bit, how shall I say, a bit sparse at the time, and we didn't seem to know really what was going on or what was going to happen.
By sparse, do you mean few people?
We saw few people. At that time, this was, well, of course, well before the build-up for the Montgomery era. The commander-in-chief then was, I believe, well, it was General Auchinleck with a Coldstreamer as his second-in-command. Major General Lease Coldstreamer. We called him Bungie Lease. But moving on from there, we were then informed, I think it was April time, that we were going out for a rest and regrouping. The lads thought we were going down to somewhere like Cairo or Alexandria. This was not to be. We up sticks. We were taken out of the defensive line. We went down Halfaya Pass. And there, just below the pass, at a place called Bugbug, we stopped. It was an awful place, more or less on the seashore, on the Med shore. It had been a camel grazing ground, so obviously it was a bad spot, but there we stayed.
Is this the whole battalion?
Yes, indeed, this is the whole battalion. We were told we were there to re-equip, which I think we stayed there for something like 2 weeks. 2 weeks more.
Did you re-equip?
We re-equipped with vehicles and various other things, weapons, and one of our first tasks, after being given a two-man bivouac apiece, we'd never known a bivouac, I'd never slept in a bivouac, you just slept in a hole in the ground when you're in a forward area. But we're given 2 men bivouacs to sleep in, and we were told to polish up, get kitted up in the fashion which guardsmen are used to, get out of the messy gear we were in. We were issued with fresh KD, shorts cut to the proper length, and we were then asked to clear a great area of scrubland for a football pitch, also called. It was in fact dual purpose. It was a parade ground. This we did, and we were told to we had to be on adjutant's parade. This is about the third morning we were there, all in this new kit, polished up and on parade, the whole battalion. At that time, our adjutant was the Lord Guildford. We had an RSM called RSM Rowlands, nicknamed Scabby, Scabby Rowlands.
What was he like?
He was a tough character, but fair. One of the old school of RSMs. A man, in my opinion, he would seem old to me, being a boy of 20. He was a man probably well in his 30s, so he would seem much older at that time. We paraded on Adjutant's Parade for a morning or two, all shined up, and one morning, standing in centre rank, and the RSM and the adjutant are inspecting, coming down the ranks, and I noticed, standing there at the slope, and I noticed a few people being pulled out of the ranks and sent to the outer flank. The RSM and Lord Guildford arrived at me, inspected me. Outer flank. I thought, what have I done? Wondering if I was in, thinking I was in trouble. Sent out on the outer flank, where eventually there were about, 20 odd of us.
What well, exactly is the outer flank?
On the flank of where the battalion is lined up into a spot at the end of the ranks, adjacent to the battalion. We soon found out what it was all about. We weren't in trouble. We'd been picked out for turnout, and we were to form a guard of honour. A guard of honour, we were told, for the King of Greece, who was coming to visit the next day. The next day arrived, we're lined up, the guard of honour, and the battalion were lined up, told that they would be on a cheering party when the King of Greece arrived. This was very short-lived. The King of Greece arrived in a motorcade, swept through the battalion, covered us all in sand from the vehicles, and that was as much as I saw the King of Greece, and the battalion was silent. The same afternoon after this episode, the RSM appeared with us all on parade. He said, "I shall have to teach you how to cheer," which he proceeded to do, and we were ordered to cheer, hip hip, hurrah, hats off, and that was it, that day. That was the episode with the King of Greece. We stayed in the area, as I say, doing practice shoots out to sea with the anti-tank guns, various things, building up the equipment again, and after a period of about 2 weeks, we were ordered to pack up. We were on the move again. Our move was back up the Hellfire Pass, which was the prominent feature in that area. It took you from the flatland, the coastal area, and you climbed up into the escarpment area, which took you around what they call the Katara Depression, and Hellfire Pass was bombed regularly by Stukas. It was the only way up from the coast road, a very winding, high escarpment, well known to so many people who were out there. We eventually arrived at a position some miles away from Tobruk, in between Tobruk and a place called Ghazala, and we're told to dig in slit trenches and to dig in the anti-tank guns. We're on an escarpment. It was an area of 2 square miles. We were given to understand we were going to dig in on the box system, as they called it. It was later to become known as Knightsbridge Box, the Cauldron. And we dug in. The ground was rather hard. It was rocky, shaley. We had to use gelignite and ammonol to blow areas to dig the guns in, and we had to dig 6 feet deep slit trenches. We also were told to dig the transport in. That meant we had to create sangers so we could put vehicles in nose down to protect the engines and the bonnets of the vehicles. It was very hard work. Luckily, my section sergeant, Sergeant Stacey, was an ex-miner, so he was very good with a pickaxe. And we eventually settled down to this. And after about 3 days, I was called out and told that I was going on a 6-pounder anti-tank gun course. I'd never seen a 6-pounder. They were new. We hadn't any in the desert. At that time, we only had the 2-pounders, which we called a pea shooter. Bear in mind, before this happened, we were attacked. We knew that attacks were coming, and we used the 25-pounders and machine guns, which were dug in about 200 yards in front of the anti-tank guns. And then in the box we had, apart from our own battalion, we had attachments such as a battalion of Sherwood Foresters, I think it was at that time. They were anti-tank. They were attached to us. And the RHA with 25-pounders, they were part of the setup in the Knightsbridge box. We found out that other boxes had been created, one at Ghazala, which the and Regal Ridge, as it was known, and also Bir Hakeim, where there was a box created in which there were New Zealanders and Rhodesians and the Free French. All this I'm later to find out, in reality. The 2nd Scots Guards, who were part of our brigade, they were out towards Ghazala. There were 3 boxes created in that area, in what we call the frontline position, facing Rommel's army. Sporadic fighting with tanks occurred around the box. We mined 3 sides of the box. We did this at night. We were all sent out on mining parties. And, as I said previously, at some point, I can't remember, I was called out and told I was going on a 6-pounder anti-tank gun course. I joined the party, which was, I think, 5 or 6 of us, with 1 officer. We were all gun layers. We were driven along the lines of communication between the Knightsbridge box and the box at Berrakeen, which was a distance of about, I'm given to understand, of about 11 miles along the lines of communication. We arrived there and we just had our bedrolls. We hadn't a rifle between us. We'd gone on a 1500 weight truck. We just had our bedrolls with us. And immediately we were shown this new six-pounder, which at that time the only people to have them in the desert were the Rhodesians and the New Zealanders who'd been training on them. We were shown the rudiments of this exciting new gun. It was far, far bigger than anything we'd been used to as an infantry unit. And the first day we were there, we were shown how to use it, how to manipulate it, and we fired what they call sub-caliber. What happens is a Bren gun is fastened to the piece, the barrel in normal terms, but you call the barrel a piece, which was, I'm given to understand, it had been adapted from a naval gun which was used in Malta around the harbour to ward off German patrol boats, which used to come, torpedo boats, which used to come in. Very effective weapon, but it was about 2 feet longer in the barrel than when we received it. They decided to adapt it, put it on wheels, and adapt it as an anti-tank gun for the infantry. Cut the barrel by about 2 feet. We fired this, our first training run, with sub-calibre, so that was a Bren gun tied to the barrel, and a vehicle went across the area in front of us about 900 to 1,000 yards away, and we had to fire at a petrol can being dragged along in the rear of this 1500 weight truck, which we did. It was totally different to the 2 pound round the tank gun, which has a 360 degrees traverse, though the firepower is virtually nil. About 500 yards with a 2 pounder shell was totally ineffective on his tanks. But the size of this shell we were shown for the 6 pounder, which must have been at least 10 times bigger than the 2 pounder anti-tank gun shell, and the breech block being much larger. Anyway, we got the first day over, led what we could about it. The next morning, we're just getting out of our bedrolls, and we'd got a fire going, which you could before the whilst there was heat haze coming up and shimmering, you know, people can. So we light a fire, which was always a petrol fire. You just put a spade into the sand and poured petrol in, and that was your fire for cooking. We were having a brew up, and our bedrolls were strewn about. We're just sort of pulling ourselves together, knowing that on this particular day we were going to fire it, bearing in mind we'd only been there the day before, but we had to be shown this gun very quickly. Suddenly, what we call a PU, a little Austin radio vehicle, dashed into the air. There was various people spread around in this area, various trucks, and as I say, it was what they called the box at Berrakeen. All of a sudden, this vehicle came through. An officer stood there and he shouted, "Get back to your battalions as quick as you can." The push has started. So that meant that the Germans were attacking on the front, and within 15 minutes, we observed fire, probably about a couple of miles away, and through field glasses our officer observed a German armoured car coming into view, and we hurriedly piled everything onto the truck and set off back, as ordered, back to our battalion. This became quite a nightmare. We were, some of us, laid on the equipment and our bedrolls in the back of this truck, and we were being fired at by German armoured cars, and we raced along around the area of El Adam, known as El Adam, which was used as an airstrip. It was a salt flat in the desert, used as an airstrip. And all hell seemed to be let loose. We didn't know what was happening. We're making our way along, and we'd gone about 5 miles, and there was all sorts of stuff going on. It was my baptism of fire, you could say, because there was German air base coming over. There was, as I say, it was chaotic. And all of a sudden, we hit a slit trench with our front wheels. The axle on the vehicle broke, and we were told we had to get back to the battalion the best we could. Well, we made our way through various, how shall I put it, sangers, slit trenches, avoiding fire, avoiding what was going on, and we were told we had to get back to the battalion the best we could on foot. We eventually did, but having started off from Bir Hakeim at probably 8 o'clock in the morning, I can't quite remember times, but I know it was early, and we're making our way back. I eventually arrived back with my section, exhausted, as were my comrades from the other sections, hungry, having had nothing all day, and I got back to my position. Darkness had fallen. Eventually got back to my position somewhere about 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening. They had been in action on the front. There had been attacked by German tanks. They'd been in action with the two-pounder. I got that back there very hungry, and I've often told people about this. Obviously, we could not light any fires for any cooking or a brew up at night time, and at various times during the day also, except when the heat haze was at its best. And I remember we used to be issued with tins of sausage in those days, round tins of sausage. They were set in a, would be what I would call lard, white fat. They were really greasy. But I remember well being so hungry and eating a tin of these sausages cold out of the tin. Hardly very palatable, but when you're hungry. From then on, things started to warm up. We were in action. We were being shelled heavily. Hence the name I gave you earlier as the Cauldron. It became known as the Cauldron. It was a 2 mile square, and everything that the Germans had seemed to be shoveled into that 2 mile square. We were under heavy, very heavy bombardment. We were subject to Stuka raids of maybe 60 or 80 planes in the sky at any one time. And they were strafing us, dropping their bombs and strafing us all during this period. In the, we were attacked by his tanks. The few tanks that we had at that time were not able to combat his Tiger tanks, which they had then. And our 2-pounder anti-tanks were, anti-tank guns were pretty useless. At 500 yards, the armour-piercing shot, without it, touched a very vital spot on a German tank, didn't hurt it at all. You had to hit the tracks to stop him. The tank tracks was the only way, one of the most vulnerable spots. And our, what we called, and my pal, Ernie Gallantry was one of them. He was in the suicide squad. This was the Bren gun carrier platoon. They were going out through the only gap in the minefield and waltzing in and out of his tanks and just throwing what we call sticky bombs. They were plastic grenades, plastic bombs, and they stuck to the side of a tank and they aimed them for the turrets in general. And these were what I called very brave fellas, our suicide squad. They would waltz in and out at high speed, manoeuvring in all directions, and then race back in through the only gap in the minefield. To cut out, this happened daily. We're under attack daily, all the time, and our RHA 25-pound guns were firing and firing, and we had, I think, one 9.2 anti-aircraft, a gun capable of firing at the Stukas. We had that in the box. And we were in this defensive position concurrently then. We stayed where we were. We were subject to these attacks daily, as I said before. I can't quite remember, but after a few days, I was then called out, along with probably five or six others, and told I was going down to a second echelon, which, as most people are aware, we had a first echelon and a second echelon, because we were going to have 6-pounder anti-tank guns delivered straight from the UK. And I and these other gun layers had to be down there, second echelon, to receive them and to prepare them for instant action. They arrived, driven by the Warwicks and Wilts Yeomanry. They had come direct from landing at Suez. These boys from the Warwicks and Wilts Yeomanry, this was their first look at the desert. They were ordered to drive these down to our second echelon. We received them, set to work immediately. They were covered in yellow grease paint, which a new gun always is. We had to clear all the grease paint and prepare the breech blocks and the gun in itself for action. They were on removable wheels, which, as the 2-pounder anti-tank was, they were a much bigger thing than we'd been used to, and they'd been brought in, towed by these Warwicks and Wilts Yeomanry. We completed the task in 24 hours. I stayed overnight at